You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Rosaire Appel. Rosaire, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Brainerd.
Let's talk about what you're working on now. I don't know whether it's drawings or books or other editions. What are you working on in your studio? You're in New York, is that correct?
I'm in New York, and my projects move from one thing to another. So after the last book that I did, which was Tapes, I've been thinking a lot about sound and about the sounds that are around all the time, the sonic atmosphere in New York. I mean, you think it's ugly.
And you're talking about Manhattan, right?
Like Manhattan, yeah, New York. Right in Manhattan. But, I mean, I go to Brooklyn and other parts, in Queens, you know. But yeah, the surrounding noise. You're walking down the street and you hear these things. And so I've become very interested in what something that's like drawing sounds, but it's not like drawing that. It's not like translating sounds I hear, but it's drawing that I listen to. So I make a drawing, and this has reference to listening rather than to looking, although you're looking at it because it's a drawing.
But so that's a nice way to talk about like the soundscape of New York, because as you say, it sounds like it could be noisy or ugly, but you're approaching it in quite the opposite way.
Well, yeah, there's an assumption that, you know, all sounds are big sounds are interruptive and ugly, you know, like garbage trucks and you know, things like that. But if you hear them from several blocks away, you know, if your ears are open, you hear these sounds from different distances, and they echo off different places, and they're mixed with things like car horns, and you think car horns are awful, but they're these notes of like little solos that are happening, and maybe a bird call, and maybe a child's voice, but they're all in different spaces, so they come at you. It's like a symphony, but I'm listening to that, but I'm not trying to record it, even visually, but I'm aware of it, and so in the drawings that I'm doing, this is the connection.
So let's talk more about that connection, because you talked about it coming out of the book Tapes. So to talk about the book Tapes, which you made in 2017, that book, there was ideas in there that were kind of musical or architectural. And let's talk about how you made those, because you're actually using tape in some cases, but the drawing of the lines in that particular book, Tapes, and just correct me if I'm wrong in how I'm looking at this, but are often like architectural assemblages or like notes on a scale or something like that, or look something like that. Is that correct?
Yes, and they're all made with tapes, because at a certain point I got very tired of my own mark making, and I needed to be revived. So I started drawing with tape, and tape is like a straight line. But wait, you can do all these different things with straight lines, because so many things are straight lines, like a poem. There are several in that book that remind me of the structure of poems, where there are parallel lines, but they're different lengths, and they seem to rhyme at the end. So this is like taking the idea of just a plain structure and playing with verbal forms, but without the content.
Kind of like, I don't know, it reminds me of taking a line for a walk kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
The lines you're making with the tapes are seem to have almost a life of their own, but so how did that, now that would seem now that you're talking about soundscapes in New York and how they're perceived and how that's turning into drawing. How is that different from the tapes? Because in the tapes book, as you're saying, it's, you know, it's referencing poetry and music. How do the drawings that you're making now reference the sounds you're hearing in New York?
Well, for one thing, I'm doing them with marks again. So I'm making marks in ink. And what holds these marks together in the space and this will eventually be a book, because this is the way I work, is by exploring something and then eventually booking it, because the book is like, for me, it's like a little exhibit. It's a finalization of a project. Doesn't mean that the drawings don't exist on their own, but it's a way of compiling things together and saying I'm done with it, at least for the moment.
So it's a new form unto itself, and as you're saying, like an exhibit, it's a type of archive, but also it communicates a whole language within it. Like the tapes is a kind of language that you explored,
yeah,
and invented and then left, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my books are print on demand, which means that I have total freedom. I'm totally responsible for my books, and I have total freedom with them. So I can explore ideas as they come to me. There's not a big wait time. I can do a series of drawings and put them together in book form, and it's done.
So let's talk about that process a little bit, because that's very interesting. So in other words, and I'm familiar with bookmaking to some extent because I've done some in the past, but this form of print-on-demand obviously is a new way of working with print and bindings and everything else. So you're assembling, you're doing drawings, and these drawings are on pages, single sheets, and then you assemble these. And just correct me if I'm wrong or go through this process, but then you scan and upload those sheets into an online kind of place like Lulu. I think it's one of the ones you use, right? And then that gets assembled into a book, and then you can, in other words, order one copy of it and you have it, or other people can order a copy. Is that the whole process?
That's it, basically, except that I do the layout in Adobe InDesign, which gives me a lot more freedom than templates on other sites.
So you're scanning the drawings first, and then with Adobe InDesign, you can manipulate the drawings and how?
Well, I scan the drawings and then, manipulate them and edit them a lot in Photoshop, and then bring it into InDesign, which is essentially a page layout program, and it makes a PDF, which I upload to one of the sites. There's another one called CreateSpace, which is an arm of Amazon, and if you publish on CreateSpace, it automatically is available on Amazon. You know, of course, there are drawbacks to this, because there are limitations.
Of course.
But
also, as you're saying, there's freedoms. You can have a book.
Exactly.
Your book is out there and done. So let's talk a little bit about how the book then, because you're making an art book, right? There's it's artist book. You know,
yes.
I mean, there's people who are writing text and putting other books up, but an artist book, of course, how it's actually finally printed out and delivered is important. Like I would imagine, most people aren't downloading these. Or are they? Are they also digital downloads?
No, they're not, because they don't really work on the screen. Because I work in spreads,
right.
So you really have to talk back and forth with the spreads.
So just to go through the process of publishing, because this is such a different kind of a process for an artist's book, and I'm so fascinated by it. So you go through the process you just mentioned. You have one. You can print it on demand, so you can see it. Now you have a copy of it. What happens then from the books? Do you make more as gifts for friends? Do they sell from there?
They definitely sell from there, which is one of the huge advantages, because I don't have to have these books printed and store them and do the mailing. And so, you know, there's a website, and you go there and you order it, and they do the printing and they do the mailing, and it's really simple. And I can also I also use that service and make individual covers for the books, which I sell at Printed Matter.
You mean you hand make each?
I hand make the covers.
Okay, so just to be really clear about that process, you're using a print-on-demand company, and while people can buy individually from that, you can also order, let's say, 10 copies of that of that book on print on demand, and then you wrap your own handmade covers over those 10 and give them to a store like Printed Matter.
Exactly, and other stores. You know, it's a way of making them more into an object than just a commercial product, although the interior of the book is the same.
I love that. I love that idea because it also transforms, you know, a book that is completely produced outside of your hands into something that has, you know, your hand, the touch of the artist in it, that wrapping a cover on it. So that's very interesting. I mean, I'd also like to talk about how the work then. So you're producing these books. They're going out into the world. It's how people are also experiencing your work, right? It's a different way to experience work as opposed to exhibits or large-scale drawings. These are significantly reduced. They're small books. But they're sort of, I'm trying to get at, you know, you're sharing your work with the world in a particular way, always through books. And
yeah.
So,
but, you know, I also do prints, which is a whole different category. I also do prints that I make myself and that I exhibit or exhibit at various places. But the books
are
what...
What's the printmaking process?
The printmaking process is digital. But it's similar. It's a similar subject, but because the subject always has to do with some kind of visual language. But it's like a different format than the books. The books I really am drawn to because they can go anywhere.
Well, with
anywhere
the books
the
also, as opposed to one print, a book also teaches or communicates to the viewer about your language, so to speak, right? I mean, maybe we get a sense of it if we looked at one print in a gallery, but probably not, or two prints. But a book is a whole journey that you're taking people on.
Yes, I like that a lot. I like the whole journey.
Well, I like that too. It also seems like a great way, just as an artist, to reach out to the world, right? I mean, artists want
to
take people on
connect,
journey.
Yeah.
Right, to connect. So how do they get out into it? And do you get feedback from people?
Oh, I get a lot of feedback. I mean, one of the books that I published on print on demand got picked up by a publisher in Paris, and they did a whole new edition of it, same book, but
how
they did actual copies. They found me on the internet.
Huh. So they and on the internet means it's either on your website. Or
not so much the website, but social media. It's like Instagram and Facebook, as bad as reputations they have. For artists, they're just terrific. Posting images.
So for yourself, posting, yeah, in what way is it terrific? Posting images of these things, that's what begins to drive sales of your book?
Because you accumulate an audience who's interested in your vision. And I'm also interested in their vision, and this just keeps multiplying because there are so many people out there there's so much good work that's being done, and this is one way that where you can see so much of it without spending a lot of time and effort going from one place to another, especially if you don't live in New York.
Well, also, they don't cost a lot of money, like you were saying, as opposed to previous processes of making books or editions.
Yeah.
You make one, and one for yourself to have, or if you wanted to make a small set of editions. That's so interesting. So,
and I like the fact that they're very affordable. I mean, they're, you know, I've seen books that I just love that are artist books, and they're like $500, but... I mean, that's a big obligation. It's not just the money, but if you buy a $500 book, man, you have to protect this thing, and you have to wrap it specially. And I like books that just go on the shelf. You can take it down, and you can get involved in it.
Right, right. And so, what is the size of tapes and marking time?
They're 6x9. They're typical paperback size.
And the spine is how is that made?
One of the spines is, or are they both? I think they're both with staples in the middle. So it's but usually the books that are thicker use a perfect binding. And then I also do hardcover editions of these that are actually much nicer than the paperback editions, but you know, the cost is more.
And the cost, as you were saying, still though isn't that much. It's
yeah, they're under $20.
And are you making at least half of that? I mean, is your cost much lower than that?
You know, it depends on where I sell them.
Right.
And if it's a hardcover book, I make maybe a dollar. But if it's a softcover book, I make more. But if it's a book that I sell at Printed Matter and I put a special cover on, they charge $20. They get half. Right. You know, I have my time in it, and plus the cost of the book. So, I think it's a fair price. But you know, I'm not greedy.
Well, also, it's not about the you know, living off the sale of the book. It's also
exactly
about the book being a communication tool for in your absence, right? It's a form of social media almost, right?
It is.
Social media may be driving the sales, but a book is a social object. You share it with people. You look at it more than once.
Brainerd, I like that a lot. It's absolutely true. The books I do, they're a form of social media.
It's so interesting. So now you're working on another book. Like what's happening at the moment? You're taking the drawings, the sounds that we talked to in the beginning.
The sounds. So that's one of the things I'm working on, but I'm also working on a completely different project with another publisher. It's a small publisher in Red Hook, New York, called Small Editions, and I'm doing a book with them. It will be printed in 100 copies, and so I'm working with a publisher, which is somebody who's not me, and this is really interesting because the questions that she brings up about the book form, what is a book, they're questions I don't ask. I mean, I just don't verbalize these things. I do it, so I don't talk about it. But this has a verbal exchange with it, which is really interesting to me.
Well, especially with an artist book, right? Because it's such a different approach for, I would think, I mean, the woman that you're talking to there, that's the publisher, essentially, right?
Yeah, Corina.
Press.
Uh-huh.
Corina. So, you know, those are the basic, those are such different questions than a writer would be asked, and in a way much more elusive, you know, what is a book? And
yes.
And, huh.
Yeah, it's
so
just...
Will that book be structured differently, or is there a different approach to
that
so far?
What I'm noticing is that it's becoming... that there are a lot of very conscious decisions that are being made in it. And I make a lot of decisions in my own books and I edit them a lot, but I don't verbalize why I'm doing things. They're much more intuitive. But this time things are really verbalized, which is, I don't know, it's making the whole process more conscious and also making the questions about a book and how it moves and how images move. And this one has not only images, but it has a verbal component, which is sort of unusual for my books. So it's how to get these two together, these two things together that are really talking to each other. And I had an initial idea. And she said, well, yeah, that's nice, but what about this? What about, you know, introducing reasons for doing it differently. So it's not just saying, well, it might be interesting to do it this other way, but a reasoning, a concept behind it.
Right. That sounds wonderful. It's a wonderful experience. So this is
it
a
really
new
is.
Press. That's kind of, I mean, that's such an unusual book project to go after. Is this one of their first projects, or have they done?
No, they've
like
been
this?
Doing. This is maybe their third year, and they do. This book will be a risograph print, which I've never played with before, and it's a kind of inexpensive printing that, as I understand it, it's a cross between a color Xerox and a screen print, a silk screen print. So it's not really glorious and glamorous and precise. This book will be affordable, but it will be in color. I think it's going to be a really nice little package.
And it's a small edition, similar size.
It'll be 100. It'll be an edition of 100, but the book itself will be like 8x10.
And what happens to all of these books? I mean, I would think you've been making books for a long time, right? You know, over 10 years. Are there people who collect all of your books? Do some of them go into collections, or do they all just go different places?
A lot of them go different places, and a few go to collections, and I'm really bad at marketing my work and getting them into places that I should get them into, because that's sort of not the reason why I'm making them. So it's okay if that slides.
Well, it's also interesting that people are finding them, as you're saying, like the publisher in Paris. I mean, you are promoting them. You're getting them out there. I mean, everybody could do more, but it sounds like people are finding you, which is fascinating.
Yeah, and also there's a kind of writing that's called asemic writing, which is writing that has no semantic value. So it looks like writing, but you can't read it. This is something that's, the word is new, but it's been done over the centuries by different, the Surrealists played with things like this. But there's a whole community now that's very interested in this stuff, and they're all over the world. And a lot of the things that I do involve asemic writing, so they like my work, and they take it to their communities.
So that's so interesting. So let me just frame this for a minute. So that's a whole school of artists, thinkers, writers who are kind of influenced by this world of, as you put it, you know, words that are how did you phrase it?
It's called asemic, A-S-E-M-I-C, asemic writing. And it looks like
narrative.
Writing.
It looks like writing, but it's not. It's not a language.
But it's not. And it's not even nonsense, because you have to be able to read something to be able to say it's nonsense.
So what would an example be of that?
So an example is
Jasper
like...
Jasper John's paintings be an example of that?
No.
That had numbers and letters in the print?
No, because he's using numbers and recognizable letters. It's sort of like if you look at a book that's written in Chinese and you don't understand Chinese, you would say... You would have an asemic experience, although the Chinese is not asemic because other people can understand it. But it looks like a language. It looks like
It looks like a language. It looks like it has some consistent forms in such a way that we're used to, that even if we don't recognize any of the letter forms,
exactly.
It looks like these are words and sentences somehow.
And it's closely connected to calligraphy in a lot of instances.
Right, that's fascinating. Well, it's great talking to you about all of these things. I want to ask you about what you're reading, but is there anything else we should say about your work? There'll be links to, you know, your website and more in here, but is there anything else that...
I can't think of anything. I mean, we could go on and on and on. But what am I reading is really interesting. It's a book by Zhu Bing. It's called Book from the Ground. And... It's completely written in emojis, in icons.
Wow, that sounds wonderful. So
it is so hard to read. I mean,
is that part of that field then? Is that also?
It's not asemic, because this is really using a language that is familiar to us, but and you think it's easy to read, but then I look at this and I think, wow, this is really difficult to, it takes a lot of time. You have to really pay attention to these little symbols. And it's actually telling a story.
Fantastic. And what's the name of that book?
It's called Book from the Ground, From Point to Point by Zhu Bing.
Rosea, thanks so much for talking with me today. I really enjoyed hearing about your work and progress.
This was a delight. Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.